your advisors?
Are on their way. I see they have circulated a document just setting out the legislation in a more presentable manner. I think the first, the issues dealing with Clause 2, perhaps we should just, you know, leave that for the moment, because those are things that we said we would flag in any event. And just look at the section which says new clauses. It would be useful if you had the principal act in front of you, or if you had regard to the principal act, and just by way of revising what happened yesterday, what the concern of the committee was that the amendments, once incorporated into the principal act, seem to have incorporating under this particular section provisions that should really not be there. And what we asked the drafters to do was to just look at a better way of inserting these amendments into the principal act. And the document that you have in front of you is perhaps a first step in doing that. I think it would be necessary for you to have the principal act in front of you to actually understand understand what has been said here. But from what I see myself, it looks a whole lot neater. I mean, we have headings now. The one clause, for example, on page 2, which has a heading now, prohibition of intercepting domestic interception, actually incorporates that clause 5B, which we said was not in a proper place. It needed to stand on its own. I think it was the Honorable Landers that had raised this thing. And even if it's just a single clause under that heading, it's at least a standalone clause, and I think it looks far better as it now stands. There was also the question of the Inspector General, and it seemed just to have been thrown in under that section dealing with the functions of the NCC. And I think the way it looks here now, the reporting, it actually incorporates a much better understanding of the way the principal act will look once the amendments have been inserted. This Inspector General thing will also then also stand on its own. And the other problem we also had was with the offences, that somewhere there, hidden in all these amendments, was this thing of an offence. And it's not common in any piece of legislation that you just have offences hidden in that way. It actually is more appropriate to have a separate heading that you can actually see the particular piece of legislation actually does incorporate offences. And I think that is what this heading is on the end of page 2. Just for those that weren't here yesterday, these are all, the wording is all exactly the way it is in the original bill. It's just that we asked that they be incorporated in various sections so that the original act, once amended, would look much more readable and presentable. I see we have a Mr. Jafta here now. I don't think there's anything more we want to say on this. If it's the committee's view that we should actually now get the drafters to actually redo the bill with these things in. Is it on the point I'm making now?
Sure, thank you. I do not think that it would be conducive for anybody to start redrafting before we had our meeting with the minister, sort the other policy things, and then finalise what. Otherwise, I can tell you, even with these new clauses and things, it still turns around the whole policy thing that we need to discuss with the minister. So we sort that out. It may very well be that this will not be acceptable amendments, or it may be. So I would suggest not at this stage, Jesus. I think it should be proactive in such a way that may increase workload on the people.
Okay. Anybody else on the point? Perhaps then, I don't see any problem with that. I think what I was wanting to hear is that, based on the discussion yesterday, that this is an improvement. And then perhaps we've called this working document number two. Let's just give it this would be working document number two, and the one that just had the changes which we had previously spoken about, we call that working document number one. We can decide later on whether there needs to be given. So that just for reference purposes, you got the one pager, just sort of a few lines on dealing with proposed amendments. So let's just then flag and put that aside. Just on the line.
Chair, you're quite right. I think because now suddenly we have something like, I think, five documents. You're right, there was a one-pager yesterday we received or the day before. There's the Principal Act, there's the bill in its original form, and there's now this year. So we just need to be clear in our minds what we're referring to when we speak to any of these documents, and then this document that we've now received, as well as the one pager, needs to enjoy a certain status within the committee. We're just assuming that it has, and so giving it your proposal will do that. And at some point, Paul says not now, fine, but at some point when we are ready, we can then instruct the drafters to then draw up a new document, essentially a new bill. Otherwise, we're going to be referring, cross-referencing, which is a nightmare. But that's a little way down the line, not just yet. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Honour. It was, in fact, the point that I was asking whether that should be done. Now, but, I mean, we take the point that Advocate Swart is making, that perhaps we're premature. Let's talk to the Minister first. But I just wanted some idea that we can compliment the drafting team, that they in fact did do the job that we asked of them. They did straighten out the thing, and I think that was a plus in that we had at least achieved something. So I don't think the other members that aren't here would have a problem when we present this thing, but we'll keep these two documents together so that when at a later stage we can talk to the members that aren't here and then take the way forward on working document number two and working document number one. I don't know now...
Just if I may, which doesn't mean that we're accepting anything in either the one pager or this one.
Quite so. It's a working document. One will have to motivate and discuss it. You know, it will be a discussion document, and from then on we'll see the way forward. It's just that I think we have done something. It would be obviously up to the committee after our discussions with the minister what the way forward would in fact be. I need some guidance now because Mr. Jafter is sitting here. I don't see the drafters here. But I don't think we need to hear the drafters any further on this document. I think let's deal with Mr. Jafter first and we can dispose of him. I don't think he needs to be here unnecessarily longer than what he wants to. He has appear to have done something, and perhaps we should hear him on the way forward, and we can get back to just finalizing the schedule to the bill and then go on to the next bill. Mr. Jafter, over to you.
Thanks, Chair, and I must apologize that I came in late. We ironically had a bit of a system of a problem with our system getting some of this thing out in time. So please accept my apologies, Chair and Honourable Member. The task from yesterday, as I understood it, was that we were supposed to give an indication of where we would bear financial implications as a consequence of the NCC being established as a standalone department. We indicated yesterday to the honorable members that we would not be able to do a conclusive job of spelling out in exhaustive detail the financial implications. So what we are really presenting here is your indicative implications. And I must also add that these have not been costed, but again, we'll give an indicative statement on what the implications will be in terms of from a financial perspective. The Perhaps I would like to draw your attention to the fact that this is a bit classified. We don't like it that people must have freely our structure. So if the committee can treat this document with due sensitivity, we may have even been pleased if maybe we can get it back. But the committee will give us guidance as long as we are sure that it's going to be treated with due circumspection.
Just before you proceed, Mr. Jeffter, I see there are some members that are they're wanting to raise. Is it in connection with what Mr. Jeffter has just said now?
I'll hear
Mr. Landers and then I'll hear Mr.
Swartz. If that is what Mr. Jeffter wants, we must respect it. And then just if the staff and officials can ensure that only the ad hoc committee members have copies, and then you can either put your name at the top and hand it back when it's done with the chairperson, if we could just agree to that.
Perhaps allow me to put it this way. I put it properly. The situation that arrived yesterday was a question of the financial implications, and the bill said that there aren't any, and I think it must be conceded that there must be financial, that it follows it. It cannot be the case. And what we asked Mr. Jeffter to do was just to give us some type of a broad outline of the structures that would be involved, and we'd leave the financial things for later, because we did not expect him on such short notice to come and comment on the actual cost involved. Obviously, there would be much more people involved in a whole range of other role players that would want to say something about the cost. And so, not to be unfair to Mr. Jeffter, and to consider his request, I think that all the documents that he's handed out should actually be given back to him. He's obviously got to go consult with his minister. He's got to go consult with his superiors on the issue. I don't even want to ask, to what extent he has got the authority to, because what we wanted was just to get some broad outline of what it is that we can expect in terms of this new structure. So if the committee at least just had something in its mind in terms of, I know yesterday there were discussions about CEOs and financial people involved in that. And so I would strongly recommend that all the documents be handed back to Mr. Jeffter, so that we not be held, Mr. Jeffter not be held, or that the department not be held by what has been said here today. Because I think it was really the committee's intention just to get a broad idea, and not that we guess, because Mr. Jeffter would have some broad idea of what was going to involve, and we don't want to get involved in the nitty-gritty if there's any positions there that perhaps need not be disclosed. I don't think that this is the place that we want to get to discuss that thing. So I don't know if the committee feels that way. My view would be that all the documents that was handed out to the members in this regard be handed back to him, and at this stage those documents be regarded as confidential. Can we then proceed on that understanding? Then, Mr. Jeffter, I'll hear you, and just keep in mind that we don't want you to get into any of the operational areas of how this thing would, You should know. We want just this broad scanning, of what your secretaries and those type of things. Can you then proceed, sir?
Thanks a lot, Chairperson. The NCC, as of now, as we speak, has got a structure that was approved by the minister, and it is headed by the person talking now, who is operating at the level of a DDG. That's how it is now. Once it is established as a standalone department, and as is it is proposed in the bill, it will be headed by a DG. So there will be implications to the extent that a new person will be appointed. the head of the NCC will be appointed at the level of a DTG. I may just say, Chair, please for the record, because sometimes these things are important to state, that there is no expectation, at least on my person, that it's a given, that therefore I will be the DG. It's important just to clarify so that people don't assume that you are piloting this thing because you have any personal interest. It's a matter that I also do like to emphasize to my colleagues that I'm not really advancing a personal interest. But nevertheless, the person in charge of the NCC will be at the level of a DG and will be the accounting officer. The next point to make is that in terms of the office of that person, my view is there really shouldn't be any more changes. So there shouldn't be additional secretaries or that sort of a thing, or re-evaluating the grading of the job specs of the people in that specific office. The second point to make is that in terms of the DDG level, already there are people there. So there won't be any implications. There shouldn't be any implications because those are established entities within the NCC and the posts are filled. Where some material implications will derive from will principally have to do with respect to those provisions of the PFMA that require that certain capacities be established in any department of the state. Excuse me. And to that extent, as we suggested yesterday, we would have to appoint, or rather the NCC will have to have its own chief financial officer, because currently the chief financial officer in the National Intelligence Agency discharges his responsibilities, at least as a man, also in respect of the NCC. So there will be the financial implication there. It will also be mandatory that the NCC will have to appoint a chief information officer. Now, both the chief financial officer and the chief information officer, I would assume, will have to have administrative support in their offices. So there will be those financial implications. Then the NCC would have to consider whether we shouldn't elevate the current level of the person in charge of our internal audit. So I would imagine that we're going to have to upscale that position. And related to that, like we suggested yesterday, there would also be an audit committee of the NCC. And again, there will be financial implications. We would have to have our own policies and directives that govern our business. My own view, considered view, is that those are largely in place. They've sort of matured to a degree, but from the point of view of the PFMA, we'll just have to tighten things a bit, just improve things a bit, because it would be a standalone department. Excuse me. But in terms of the guidelines and policies that govern our activities, those are largely in place, and those would be revised as they would in any other department of the state. So it's not like we're going to need a whole new set of rules that govern our entities, our activities rather. We would also have to publish the annual report, because currently our annual report is incorporated into the annual report of the National Intelligence Agency. Now, of course, again, there are financial implications, and those can go into matters such as just the cost of publishing the annual report. So that will be the other one. There is a strong view that we may need to employ some consultants during the process of the transition from being a standalone, from being a spending center to being a standalone department. It's not anything that we have finalized among ourselves, in part because we have secured assistance appropriately so from the National Treasury and the Department of Public Service and Administration that naturally should assist any entity of the state that is being established as a standalone department. So if we do decide to employ consultants, certainly there will be financial implications, but I can assure the committee that those consultants would certainly not do that which ought to be done or should be done and will be done, in fact, by both the National Treasury and the Department of Public Service and Administration. I must add that we are doing this, at least the preparatory work, and indeed the detail of the transition. We'll be doing it, of course, with the National Treasury, Department of Public Service and Administration, and of course, the National Intelligence Agency, the Department of Defense, to the extent that we have to liaise, to have a relationship with the Intelligence Division in particular. So that is what one can say, Chair, for now about the financial implications. But broadly, one may say, as a parting shot, that the entity is firmly established as a department. It's a conceptual establishment. It's more of a conceptual thing that you are transforming. It's like initiating a young man, if I was to talk about my where I come from, initiating a young man into manhood. The essentials are there. It's just the procedures of initiating this thing to be a man. But otherwise, the components are there. I'm sorry for using what may be an inappropriate. But the essence, the fundamentals are already in place. It's just doing the things that need to be done in order for the thing to comply with the requirements of a standalone department. As I said, Chair, and as you also said, and thanks for that, these are indicative guidelines from us. Certainly we have not costed this in order to be precise, but this is what one, these will be the financial, and we must admit that we erred when we said there would be no financial implication. A parting shot, Chair, and members of the committee, is that yesterday, again, we did indicate that we do intend to grow. Signals intelligence is not about communications intelligence alone. There are various other spheres that we have to expand into, certainly informed by the national imperatives, national priorities. I made an example about our marine resources. You do need to hear what's happening in our oceans, but you also need to see. And our thinking is that we may have to expand in the direction of imagery intelligence. And to that extent, but that's a separate matter. It's not a matter that is incidental to the establishment of the NCC as a standalone department. I'm mentioning that because perhaps in due course we will come back with some proposals and options so that the committee can give its approval and indeed its guidance on which way we need to. Not this committee. Thanks for that. The JCI. Yeah. That's all I wish to say now. Thank you.
Thank you, Mr. Chaffler. Before I hand over to the members, see if there's any clarification they want. Typical of these departments, my experience has led me to understand is that ever so now and again, the department wants a building, their own buildings. Is there envisaged here at any time that you might be requiring a building at some time or another, you know?
I ought to have mentioned this, Chair. So established is this young boy, going back to my example, that in fact he has his own house. The problem is that he has yet to be a man. We have got our own buildings. We have got a budget for additional buildings. We are housed within the National Intelligence Agency precinct. So in respect of that, we are well catered for. There will be no need arising from the legislating of the NCC as a standalone department.
One of the things that the Honourable Landers raised yesterday or mentioned was the question of computers and I think it's software and hardware, and one understands these things can be very expensive at some time. Is there any issue here about the hardware and the software and the furniture and those little things, which sometimes turns out to be quite a few million rands that would be different once this thing stands alone.
Chair and members of the committee, I would want to really assure you, yes, certainly to the extent that you would have a new chief financial officer, there would be office equipment provided to him or her. Yes, there would be financial implications, but broadly speaking, the NCC has got everything that it really should be having. Because for all intents and purposes, the NCC is operating as a standalone entity, except for that it is doing that as a spending agent of the NIA. So hardware, software, all of those are in place. In terms of the accounting systems, the chief financial officer would be in charge of finance, assets, supply chain, compliance and internal control. But those are issues that are already in place. It's just a question of severing the link between ourselves and the NIA. But the fundamental systems and institutions and guidelines are in place for that for us to continue to function as a standalone department. Thanks, Chair.
Thank you, Mr. Jaffta. Honourable members, anything?
Chair, just a question. In the financial implications on the bill itself, we'll have to have a proper figure before we pass this or move forward with the bill. So I presume we need to just indicate that there's a sizable costing exercise that needs to be done as soon as possible, because that figure also has to coincide whatever comes out in future budgets for this transformation. It's not a thumbsuck figure that say, okay, approximately so many million or whatever the case may be. It needs to be a proper costed thing. So I think you just need to give some indication from Mr. Jaffta as when that would be, when we would be able to expect that, because that can delay our completion of dealing with this bill.
Okay, I see the Honourable Landers and then Honourable Vardy after that.
Well, Chair, if we're going to go that route, I haven't quite made up my mind whether we should, then those figures must be presented rather to the JSCI. Those financial aspects are never presented to an ad hoc committee when it comes to the services, even of this nature. So that's just a qualification I would insist on. Please.
If we proceed in this direction of setting up a new department, and I think I'm also not clear whether we should be moving in that direction, but suppose that we do, has this thing been cleared with the Department of Public Service and Administration? Because to set up a department, I would guess you need their consent and approval for a new structure.
Yes, it was cleared with the Department of Public Service and Administration, and also with the Department of Finance, with National Treasury, and indeed by Cabinet and the Cabinet committees before that.
Anybody else? Mr. Mugabadeli? Honourable members, if that is all. And I think the way forward on this is perhaps for Mr. Jaffta then to take this thing to the minister. Because what I think we're getting is just Mr. Jaffta's personal understanding. And he makes the point that he's not putting himself in this position. And because of that he's able to say exactly what is needed here. But we have got some idea now of some of the implications. So I think perhaps the way forward is to just and also those from the ministry to note the concern of the committee. What the committee is looking at is just now a full set out of what is actually going to be required, and obviously the cost implications is something which we will have to get to. Whether that's going to be done now, I don't suppose that it is that we would want the department or the minister to be doing a cost set out here if we have not yet sorted out the policy issues, because it would be a wasteful expenditure to set them to do that very tedious job and then later on to the committee might decide otherwise. But I think if Mr. Jaffa can then just advise the minister of that concern of the committee, the two issues, that we get some better idea of the way the thing is going to be structured, and then also the cost implications that we are looking at. Then, honourable members, I think having heard that, we will hand back the documents then to Mr. Jaffa as we agreed. We'll call that a working document number 3, and we can deal with what's the name, although we don't have it. After we let the secretary just record that there is a working document number 3, which has been handed back to Mr. Jaffa, and that we will again have a look at that, or whether the document would be needed later.
Chair, do you think it would be totally inappropriate to suggest that a copy of that document goes to the secretary for safekeeping in the other capacity as a secretary at the JCI and keep it there? It may just be that next week come time some of us would like to reflect on that, and I don't think Ms. Jaffa should send documents up and down or fly up and down all the time, just to our convenience. I'm sure she's got some other work to do as well in terms of scanning.
Help me, honourable members. Is it the understanding then that the document is not that seriously classified, and I use the word classified in a very broad sense, meaning merely that it might be distributed, that members on this committee that are not properly vetted would then be entitled to come to the JSCI office and ask for this document? Or is our understanding that the document just be kept and that this committee then be asked, that the JSCI, which is a separate committee, just keep this document in safekeeping so that there is a copy in Cape Town, so to say, where the committee is sitting? Is that the understanding, then? The honourable one?
No, Chair, I think what Mr. Advocate Swart is proposing is that as is the case with documents we receive from the services, a copy of this document stays in the JSCI, but only JSCI members can have access to it. Unfortunately, people like Dean Smuts and I don't know who else, Groenewald, would then be excluded from access to it. It's just that some of us may, at some stage, whenever, may want to just go quickly back and look at what is in there, and that should be provided. We don't want to be phoning Mr. Jaffa and saying, can you fax us and things like that.
No, that is indeed the way I understood it, Honourable Honours. I just wanted to get the procedure right so that it's not messy looking. You understand? The way I think it should be done is that the secretary of this committee, the ad hoc committee, then be asked to forward this document to the secretary of the JSCI, that the document then be held in safe custody there by the JSCI, and that it be understood that it is not this committee that is holding the document. That's just the procedure I'm trying to, then so let it be. Honourable members, then, I think we've heard Mr. Jaffa now. I don't think, apart from going through the other bills, that we want to hear Mr. Jaffa any further on this particular issue. Can we then proceed with just finishing off this bill, because we were still going to get into the schedule, and I don't know, it might be advisable for Mr. Jaffa to stay in here. I don't think we're going to be very long with this bill and the other bill. We don't intend to run into the afternoon period with this bill. So I think maybe it would be useful for Mr. Jaffa to stay, because he might be needed to give an input. Honourable members, I'm now back on the Bill 38, the National Strategic Intelligence Amendment Bill. We were on page 5 of that bill yesterday. You will recall that when we got to page 5, there was a concern about clause 5, which was a proposed amendment to the regulations. If you looked at the Principal Act, what this thing is asking an amendment of Section 6 of Act 59 of 1994. And what that refers to is the Principal Act. It's referring to Section 6 of the Principal Act. And Section 6 of the Principal Act has a heading called Regulations. And this particular clause is saying we want to add after C a new clause, C capital A, so that the minister who makes regulations can make a regulation dealing with the manner in which an authorization contemplated in Section 2, capital 2AD, may be executed. And that is the section which we had a problem with the minister having that authority, and it's one of the issues which we want to speak to the minister about. So I think the understanding was that we'll flag that particular clause and not deal with it now. There was also concern that the minister was making regulations for himself. Although what it's actually referring to is that he makes regulations to deal with his instructions. So he's going to give an instruction, but these regulations will then deal with how the instructions will be carried out. But I think the members raised the genuine concern that there might be a problem with this. So let's flag it. We then go to the amendment of laws, which is clause 6 and 7, the short title commandment. I don't think we see anything strange there which needs to be dealt with. Clause 7 says this shall be called the National Strategic Amendment Act. That's consistent to a... and then we turn over to page 6. We are now on Schedule 1. What normally happens is when you amend things like this, there's a whole lot of consequential things that happens in other acts that need to be amended. And this is dealing, the schedule is dealing with all the other acts that need to be amended in the event that the main amendment takes place. So the first thing that has been envisaged here, and I take it you understand that these things run in date form, the earliest act will be first in the schedule, and the latest act that needs to be amended will be last. So you'll see that the schedule starts with Act 40 of 94, and it ends with Act 70 of 2002. If there was another one, there was, you know, a later act that needed to be amended, it would be Act so-and-so of 2003. Now, the first act that is being proposed that might be amended is our Oversight Act. And are there any comments on this? Perhaps those of us that are on the JSC, I would understand now, just broadly, that because there would be a new department, so to say, being created, that first of all, the JSCI would have some oversight function over this, being an intelligence department. So it would have to fall under the oversight of the JSCI. So that would be something that would have to be incorporated into the Oversight Act. Similarly, the Inspector General will have an oversight function over this particular new department. And so that would also have to be covered somewhere, and more than likely also in the Oversight Act. So perhaps that is just the you know what you see on that first page, but I think one needs to be careful, because these are normally the more serious things that need to be considered, because one actually has to sit very carefully and look at the actual act, look at that if these are all the necessary amendments that need to be done, and make sure that you actually have it right, because very often that's where your problem, where you'll pick up your problems in the future. So I don't think we are today going to go through that process where we look very, very carefully at the act. I think we'll just, like we did yesterday, look at the wording, look and see if there is there's nothing wrong with the wording, if there's anything that stands out that we'd mention it, but we're going to have to, I think, come back and look very carefully at the Oversight Act. For that purpose, we would need the Oversight Act, and perhaps it would be a better exercise if the honourable members would take the legislation which has been handed to you, because most of the acts that we are dealing with here has been given to you in that bundle, and actually do some homework and just go through it, because perhaps you might be more informed if you do go through it. I mean, I've went through things and seen a whole lot of things that need to be done in the other amendment bill. But if there's nothing on this first page, honourable members, then let's go over to the second page. Just note that on the first page we're inserting a definition of NCC. And if you know the Oversight Act, you know everybody is defined there as who they are. Now, if the NCC is going to be a standalone, then this would be telling us who they are, and that's been proposed now. as one of the amendments. Intelligence Services is also an important amendment to the Oversight Act, because at the moment it does not include the National Communications Center. And if that amendment is going to take place in the main act, then Intelligence Services, the definition of that is going to have to change to include that of the NCC. We go over to page 7. We're still dealing with the Oversight Act. And this is something which is in section 7. Now, if I remember section 7 correctly, in the Oversight Act, it deals with the functions of the Inspector General. And I think this is just basically dealing with that particular issue. But I think it's something we need to give more attention to, because I think the oversight function of the Inspector General in respect of the NCC might be a whole lot different to that of dealing with your NIAs and your CES. Might be a whole lot different in terms of the way he might have to report to Parliament, or in terms of his certificates and things like that. So we might have to give that a little bit more consideration, honourable members. If it's going to be incorporated here, remember it's a JSCI that's going to be dealing with the actual oversight and not the ad hoc committee. So for those members on the JSCI, just keep in mind that the NCC is a lot about hardware and software, and about, you know, the oversight function might be a whole lot different from just dealing with CES, where the oversight function is totally different. Then there is the next proposal is the RICA Act. And the RICA Act has got a whole lot of issues which we also need to look at. I don't know whether they're all incorporated here. When I tried to deal with this RICA Act, it's very complicated, very complex in terms of the NCC now, whether this is now in fact an LEA, you know, just what. I've looked at it. I did see a number of issues which need to be raised. And I personally don't think that this particular schedule is covering the concerns which which I've seen. But I think rather let it just be known that I think the schedules need to be given a more attention, and I don't think we should deal with that today. Members, I think if you don't have anything then to say, any further contributions on the schedules, let's then dispose of this thing for the time being. On the understanding, we'll meet the minister and sort out some of the issues of policy and some of the financial issues, and then we can go on to the other bill now. Before we do that, I'm told by the secretary that tea is here. I know you people just had tea, but I would hate the tea to get wasted. So, yes, honourable. So I don't know how you feel. Don't you just want to take your tea, come and sit down? I give you 5 minutes to go and fetch your tea and your biscuits or whatever it is, and then come and sit down. Unless there is a feeling that you don't want tea, in which case I think it'll be most, you'll find the caterers most disturbed that you rejected their tea. Five minutes, we'll reconvene at /2008. That's the bill you should have before you, the Intelligence Service Amendment Bill. What we're going to do now is just scan through the thing and see if there's anything that needs immediate attention. This bill is amending the Intelligence Service Service Act 65 of 2002. So those of you that have copies of the act before you, the actual principal act, it would help as we go through the various clauses in the amendment bill, that you can just compare it with the actual principal act. I don't think there's anything in the heading that follows the word bill, but I just wanted clarity from the drafters here, because there seems to be a very obvious error in the first line, the first highlighted line, the bold line, amendment to section 1 of Act 65 of 2002 as amended by section 68 of Act 53 of 2003. Now, it seems that's an error. Should that not read Act 52? Because Act 53 of 2003 is the Broad-Based Black Economic Empowerment Act. And I don't think that So I just wanted to, you know, because it's something quite fundamental. Am I correct in my understanding? If you look at the Principal Act, the copies that I've circulated, you'll see that the Principal Act was amended by the General Intelligence Law Amendment Act, Act 52 of 2003, and it was also amended by the Public Service Amendment Act, Act 30 of 2007. And it seems to me that to Section 8 of Act 53 of 2003 should actually be Act 52, because also in the Principal Act, you'll see that Act 52 and of 2003 appears regularly. So I don't know, am I correct here? Is that an error?
No, Chairperson, actually it's a typographical error. If you can look through the whole bill, it's reflected Act 52 of 2003, the other provision. So yeah, you're correct to point that out. It's an error. Thanks, sir.
So then, honourable members, I think that was a starting point. I'm clear in my mind now. I was just worried about why we were interfering with this broad-based Black Economic Act. I was just a little bit worried, but thanks for clearing that up. Then let's go on. Just understand, this is now actually the amendment to the Intelligence Service Act. We are now actually creating the body of the NCC, or the structure of the NCC. It's in the intelligence. If you look at the Intelligence Service Act, the introduction reads to regulate the establishment, the administration, the organization, and control of the National Intelligence Agency, the South African Secret Service, and the South African National Academy of Intelligence, and to establish and regulate the Intelligence Services Council on conditions of service, to repeal any act, and to provide for matters connected therewith. So here in this act, the intelligence structures are actually created, and I think the fact that we are now looking at creating the NCC as a separate entity, it became necessary to amend the second. What we are looking at now is actually that particular amendment. So just keep that in mind as we go.
I'm sorry to take you back to the short title. Believe it or not, I read this bill, and in the short title it should also say to remove the requirement for the Advisory Committee on Training, because that's what the bill does. It does away with the Advisory Committee on Training. So the short title should actually reflect that, doesn't. It's just a, you know, it helps if it's there. Yeah, it says there, if I can quote, Chair, to amend the Intelligence Services Act 2002 so as to insert certain definitions, and then it goes on to provide for the establishment of the National Communications Center, to remove the requirements of a training fund for the academy, and to grant members, etc., etc. It also removes the requirement for the Advisory Committee on Training. That's being done away with completely, which is a rather major step, which is not reflected in the short title there.
I think that's quite simple. It's an omission which should be added. I don't think there can be any complaints about that. Thanks for drawing our attention to that, Honourable Landers. Anybody else? I take it the drafters are noting these. I take it the drafters are noting these alterations. Anybody else? On the first page? Just by way of helping those that don't have the principal act before them, if you go to clause, just before clause 2, there's a substitution of a heading to chapter 2. Presently the heading in the principal act reads the establishment, comma, composition, and organization of agency, service, and academy. And what is contemplated by the amendment is the establishment, composition, and organization of agency, service, NCC, and academy. So I think what has been added here is just the NCC. We turn over to page 3. again, here the proposal is that Section 3 of the Principal Act be amended to accommodate the NCC. Section 3, the heading, Section 3 has got a subheading called Continued Existence of Agency and Service. And if you look right at the top of page 3 of the amendment bill we're dealing with, it has now been changed to continued existence of agency and services. And then what has been added now is an establishment of the NCC. And then the next clause, I mean, that speaks for itself. Perhaps what one needs to just keep in mind, Section B of that clause says the NCC consists of persons appointed as members in terms of Section 8, which we will get to later. Further down then, the following heading is hereby substituted for the heading to Section 4. The heading of Section 4 presently in the Principal Act reads Composition of Agency and Service. And the proposal now is NCC be added. I don't know if there's anything that the members want to, honourable members want to raise. If we go down to clause 6, you'll see that it says that the proposed amendment is on section 6 of the Act. Section 6 of the Act deals with the appointment of head and deputy head of academy. And what has been suggested here in the amendment is that Section 6 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the substitution for subsection 2 of the following. At the moment it reads the minister must appoint a deputy. And the only change there is that the word must be removed and that the word may be added. I don't know, is there any, because these things in law very often have the same meaning and very often they don't have the same meaning. I don't know if the drafters have got any explanation here. You know, the prayer, the section as it reads now in the Principal Act is that the president, let me just get this right. The minister must. Now it's been proposed that it be changed to that he may. If you understand some of these legal issues, you know, there's many cases that says must means may, and may means must. That where particular act says a minister may appoint, it actually is not obligatory. So I don't know what is there any thinking behind this? Because obviously something must have triggered off this. If what you are trying to say in this amendment that he doesn't have to, okay, if that's what you're trying to say, then my view would be. Because we've always had problems with that legislation when you come to court, you know. then let's just say that it doesn't have to. Why do we mess around with this must and may, which in legal terms very often means the same thing? It's like saying, you know, you can buy your tablets at the chemist or you can buy it at Pick and Pay. Or you can buy your tablets at the chemist and you can buy that Pick and Pay. So in that context, or and means exactly the same thing. What you're trying to say is you don't have to buy your tablets at the chemist. You can also buy that Pick and Pay. Or So and and or in that context means exactly the same, and very often in legislation, must and may means the same. Let us just hear from the drafters, and then I'll get to you, Honorable. And then to the...
Thank you, Chairperson. The third section as it's written is saying Minister must. In the existing legislation, the Principal Act, it says Minister must, and that means it's an obligation for the Minister to appoint. Now, what you see in the amendment, we are removing that obligation. Instead, we put the discretion. May is discretionary. So the minister may either appoint or you may not. So that's a discretion to the minister. That's the intention of this clause, Chairperson. Thanks. But for the reason behind that, I cannot give that because it's not coming from me. I was just doing my job, was drafting. So the reason behind why now you're removing the obligation and now you put it you give the minister discretion. I couldn't explain that to you. Perhaps the department can come into that, but that was the decision taken by the department. Thanks, sir.
I think it was the Honourable Blumen and the Honourable Anders.
Chairperson, thank you very much. I'm not an advocate, but I agree with. Sorry. No, it's true.
I take it the Honorable Vardy was making a joke. Eh?
Of what? Of what?
He didn't hear you. Court of criminal.
I'm a 26. He's right. No, I agree, and I'm covered. But it's not the same, Chairperson. Must and may, it's not the same. That's why I'm saying I'm not an advocate, but it's two different things. Must and may. You can't say, when I'm saying Vardy, Mr. Vardy must bring me juice there. It's a must, he must bring me. But if I said he maybe bring me that juice, it's not the same. So it's not the same, Chairperson, and I think that, yeah, but...
Honorable Blue, I'm glad you're not a lawyer, because I would have serious problems briefing you if you have that understanding of the law. Honorable Landers.
If you're done with the master, may, can I apologize? Take you back to clause 5, please. Perhaps in addressing this particular clause, we may need to also engage with the minister or some other person he chooses to delegate. Because you see, clause 5 deals with section 5, and it does a whole lot of things. And then under sub 6, which deals with reports of the Auditor General and annual reports of the Academy, that's being done away with. What we need is for someone to explain to us the implications, particularly the financial implications. Because, yeah, it deals with a PFMA. If you read sub 6 of section... Am I in the wrong place now? Am I right? Yes, I'm in section 5, sub 6, yes. You see, and it says, it speaks of the annual report of the Academy, which is then submitted to both the Minister and the JSCI for consideration. Now, is it the intention that the Academy now will no longer, well, how will it be funded? Is it expected now that the DG NIA then reports on the funding of the Academy to the JSCI? That's the issue that I'm raising, Chair, that somebody would need to explain to us. I don't expect the drafter to do that, or Mr. Jafta, or Mr. Kosa, because we're dealing with Sanai, Chairperson.
Now, are you only concerned, Mr. Landers, about 6, or are you concerned about 3, 4, 5, and 6?
Well, you see, they're doing away with the training fund. Okay. Now, there too, what does that mean? Does it mean now that NIA will have to allocate funding for SANAI from its budget? The intention originally was that funding for SANAI would be put into the training fund, and that is where SANAI would draw its funds from. So it's not quite clear to us what the intention was. I know that the minister has spoken to us extensively on SANAI, but to the extent that we are now looking at the detail, I want to submit that we may need some kind of briefing, Chairperson.
Well put, Honourable Landers. I think it's something we might just raise also, make Madam Secretary, if you can just make a note of this, something which we need to discuss with the Minister too. But I mean, we understand what has been done here. The sub clauses in the amendment bill 3, 4, 5, and 6 relates to a particular fund which relates to SANAI, the training center, and I think what has been proposed in the bill has got nothing to do with the NCC, because this bill is dealing with amendments in the act and it doesn't nearly cover the only cover the NCC. And what this particular amendment is suggesting is that the fund be done away with. And the sub clauses 3, 4, 5, 6 is all dealing with that, take out the whole lot. So if I understand the Honourable Landers correctly, is that once you get the explanation, there's no objection that these clauses then all go, because they're all related. You know, the one cannot survive without the other. So once we get the explanation, so let me just flag that we get some explanation from the minister. Can we then go back to the, I think the may and the must, let's get into that, the Honourable Swart.
Cheers, I fully understand what you mean when you talk about may and must. Although, in terms of relation, we do that, and we've done it always, and I know it causes a lot of problems in the courts, is you put in may when it's not obligatory. We might as well say the minister can appoint a deputy, and I think that would address your concern in terms of the interpretation of laws by court. But Jay, there may be a bit more to it than this. I don't know, so I'm just raising this. Currently, the Principal Act says the Minister must appoint the Deputy Head of the Academy who is responsible for the curriculum and research function of the Academy. Now we say he may, but there's no provision who will then be responsible for those functions of the Academy if he should choose not to do so. And if the answer is, well, then that can be dealt with in terms of regulations, that's fine. But leaving it with a may here, it makes the whole thing in terms of curriculum and research function hang in the air. And you will understand what I'm saying. It may say, now, well, if there's no appointment, then these things are not provided for. If you provide for it in the regulations in some other way, then it may be in conflict with the section of the Act as amended now. So I think if we at the end are going to get to may, if we accept may, or we can argue can, if you want to do the can, I would suggest that we take out the responsibilities of that deputy. Otherwise it's going to hang there, otherwise those responsibilities are going to hang there if the minister appoints or doesn't appoint. Then rather just leave it open and the regulations can make provision for that.
Thank you, Advocate Swart. Is there anybody else on this point? Mr. Chaffner.
I will brief the minister, but of course the officials will also brief them. But I know it's not my function to contribute, it's the function of the committee. But I was just wondering why do we establish in law the functions of a Deputy Director General? Because that law doesn't just say the minister either must or may appoint a Deputy Director, a Deputy Head of the Academy, but it further goes on to say that Deputy Head is responsible for this function. So the law says at every head of that SANAI shall do those two functions. And it, if the principal gives that deputy head another function, he's acting outside the law. It's just bewildering. I'm not sure that the legislature should prescribe what the functions of a deputy head of an academy should be. It's just my view. Thanks. But it's a matter I will converse with the minister.
Honourable members, anything further on that? Yes, Honourable Bloom.
Yeah, no, thank you very much, Paul, for raising, Mr. Paul, to raise it on my behalf. Thank you very much. But you see, the last line as well, the minister must make the appointment with the concurrence of the president. Where does the president come in? Yeah, if it is a deputy, if it is must. Okay.
Anybody else? I see Mr. Bloom has been convinced by his lawyer as to. I see you took my earlier advice. Anybody else? Let's go on to the next. There's a repealing of Section 9 of the Act. Section 9 is the establishment of a ministerial advisory committee on training, and it's quite a broad section. It has 9 subsections. What this clause 7 is saying is that Section 9 of the Principal Act is hereby repealed. So almost a full page. Of provisions is now repealed. But again, all those provisions deal with a particular structure or substructure. And I suppose if the understanding is that the structure is no longer necessary, then it follows that all the sub-clauses will also have to go because they are all interrelated.
Mm.
Again, perhaps we will get some, and I think we, the JSCI members, also understand the rationale behind that. Then, there's various amendments being proposed here now to Act 39 of 94, Section 10. It's a different act now. Act 39 of 1994, which is the National Strategic Intelligence Act, the act we were dealing with yesterday. And the proposal here is that Section 10 of the National Strategic Intelligence Act, Section 10, be amended. Yes. Well, my understanding 39 of my understanding of Act 39 is the National Intelligence Amendment Act. But what is being referred to is that the Act has been amended by Section 9 of Act 52 of 203. But you should find this. You should find it in the Act that. Can we have some clarity there? Can we go over to the drafters and get clarity?
It's Act 55 of 2002. Yeah, there's an error what you see there. It's not Act 39 of 1994. I've picked that one up. It's Act 65 of 2000 because we are amending the intelligence services. It's Section 10, but the amendments are to Section 10.
Can you repeat that? Should this thing read amendment of Section 10 of Act 65?
Of Act 65
of 2002. 2002. A very, very confusing error, I must say, that I last night thought there were wiser people than me that might have a more legalistic answer, but I see it's a typing error answer from what we hear now. So then we go to Section 10. Heads of the Intelligence Service and Academy. And what has been said is that Section 10 of the Principal Act is hereby amended by the substitution of subsection 2 for the words preceding paragraph A of the following words. And it's a hyphen problem. Now, let's just deal with what is in front of us, okay? In the amendment bill, what has been suggested is that the Principal Act has got a problem in that Director General does not have a hyphen in between the two words. And the amendment that has been proposed is that a hyphen be inserted. Am I understanding that correct? But if you look at the Principal Act, my Principal Act, the hyphen is there. I don't know if my secretary made put this in.
Chairperson, what does this stand here? You are thinking. No, I see it. Yeah, it's here. Yeah. They said it must get in there. It's already there. It's already.
I understand, but you are saying that it's according to you. That's my problem. But I agree with the chair.
No, that's fine.
Yeah, Epic, it's what will you control your client, please? Sir? Look, drafters, is that that's another error that we can.
Which was correct.
Now.
I'll have a look at that, sir. I'll have to have a look at it. And then perhaps we won't have to amend it if it's already there. There's no need for that amendment.
But there's a further amendment.
Yeah.
There's a further amendment in that particular section which you are now deleting approval of the minister.
But, sir, there's another part.
Okay.
There's the
before the approval in brackets and another V just after that. So there's a double V if you take that out. So the V must also come out.
I brought his attention to that yesterday. But let's first deal with the... Am I to understand then that approval of the minister as it presently stands in the Act, that's now been deleted? Is that correct?
Intention, Chair of
Okay. Okay, then. Subsection 3 of that section 10 is also being proposed to be amended. The Director General, there's no problem with the hyphen now. But again, the approval of the minister has been deleted. And I don't think there's a... We need to go into that any further. We then go to the amendment of section 12 of 65 of 2002. Section 12 deals with the general powers of the minister. And it has been proposed here that the particular phrase dealing with the Public Finance Management Act be deleted. And what has been inserted now is with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance. I trust that it's something we could raise with the minister. I don't think it's by something that the wording seems to be okay. We go then.
So just to ask you to also flag, you see, what this deals with is the acquisition of immovable property, right? And the clause then goes on to say that it requires the concurrence of the Minister of Finance. Well, on the surface, it seems fine. And this is from my notes here. When the property is sold or disposed of, the concurrence of the Minister of Finance is not required. So when we engage with whoever, whether it's the minister or anybody else, can we also just flag that aspect, please, Chairperson? You see, when they need to buy a property, they need Trevor Manuel's okay and blessing. But when they decide, no, okay, now we've had it with this property, now we're going to sell it, then Trevor Manuel's okay is not required. It's just a little anomaly which someone would need to explain to us, please, Chippers.
And I'm thinking behind the query is that unless there's an acceptable explanation, there should be no reason why his concurrence shouldn't be required when they sell. Is that?
Yeah, well, if they need his concurrence when they buy it, shouldn't they also need his concurrence when they want to sell?
Subject to the rationale behind the omission. Yes, sir.
Thanks, sir. I can give a quick answer to this one, sir. The reason for the amendments for this paragraph to remove the word subject to Section 7 of the PFMA and put instead with the concurrence of the Minister of Finance was the PFMA at the moment is being amended, and this very specific section, it is also being amended. So that's why it was decided that we should put the concurrence of the Minister of Finance. And the second part, the concern of the member, why the concurrence of the minister won't be necessary if you dispose the property. It is necessary when you acquire. Yes, Chairperson. The section, the paragraph is only talking about the acquiring of the property. When they acquire the property, they must seek the concurrence of the Minister of Finance. That's what it says at the moment. The selling, the disposal of the property is dealt with in another paragraph, but not in this paragraph.
Which paragraph?
The paragraph that is in the amendment.
No, which paragraph?
It's paragraph A in the amendment. Okay, I'm going to read the amendment for you. Paragraph B is on page 3. Yes.
Concern is not what with the amendment. My concern is with the section that deals with the disposal and or sale of immovable property. Because it seems to make sense that if you need Trevor Manuel's concurrence, on the one hand, you would also need his concurrence when you want to dispose of that property. Now, that is not clear here, certainly not to me, because if you're putting this in here, you should also put it in where it provides for the sale and disposal of that property.
Yes, I'm listening.
So unfortunately, the explanation now makes things very difficult. If Section 70 are being amended, after its amendment, it will prescribe a specific manner in which immovable property be acquired by government departments. Now, are we going to pass legislation that would just say, well, with the concurrence of Minister of Finance, and then just hope that whoever is the Minister of Finance at whatever time will bear that in mind? And also, the problem is very probable that that would also open up a possibility in certain circumstances for a Minister of Finance to bypass some of the requirements of the BFMA, maybe with good reason or good argument, but maybe not. I'm just concerned that we may now be entering something that may prove difficult at the end. That is the way things need to be dealt with, and after the amendments to Section 70 are finished, that will, the new amended Act will say that is the way to deal with these things, and are we not now bypassing that by substituting? I understand the time problem, but can we just flag that or entertain some thought on that, please?
You wanting to flag this particular clause 9 in the amendment, which the understanding, I think it's the Honourable Landers has already asked that we revisit this thing, so I don't yeah, well, look, we've been told now that the PMFA is in the process of being amended. I don't know whether that is a strong or a weak reason for us to be doing this. We need to look here, obviously. We can't talk from an uninformed position as to what might be happening in the PMFA. So one will have to look at it. I think it's useful that it's been mentioned that that is what the case is, and so we need to look at that. Because this might well be one of those sections that you would deal with if the explanations are acceptable. And if this thing is eventually going to be enacted, it might be one of those things that we would want to suspend subject to those sections in the PMFA coming into operation. I don't know. You know, one will have to look at one might have to look at, but we need to understand what is in the PMFA before we can. So I think it's only proper we should flag this. Let's go over to page 4 then. Clause 10 of the amendment bill is dealing with section 13. this is with retirement. I think this seems to be consistent with recent political statements. Mr. Vardy, and then the Honourable Landers.
No, I just want to check for the purpose of information. whether this is a general principle that applies to the whole public service, as negotiated in the Public Services Bargaining Council, or is this a specific provision for the intelligence services that we are introducing? And if it is something specific, has it been passed through, what is called Intelligence Services Council? So is this with the consent of the staff and members and that kind of thing?
Yes, Honourable Anders.
Chair, I'm raising a stylistic query. The amendment clause says, despite subsection 1, but elsewhere in the Principal Act, the style reads, notwithstanding the provisions of subsection, etc., etc. So, yeah, and just for consistency sake, can we ask, or can we just amend that to also read, notwithstanding the provisions of subsection 1, instead of despite subsection 1? I don't know whether it makes any difference in law, in a court of law,
Yes, Honourable Sir.
Sure, well, I agree with what Honourable Lund is saying. Just something else. We introduced in a number of amendments to the Principal Act the inclusion of NCC. When we talk about agency or services, NCC and academy, shouldn't the NCC also fill in here when you talk about intelligence services or the academy? Or are we now suddenly including the NCC as one of the services while we talk agency service, and is that sufficient? No, it's a question.
As I understand it, the definition has changed now to allow for the NCC to be part of the intelligence services. Mm. So when it speaks of the intelligence services...
I think the question, the matter raised by the Honourable Vardy is this not something which was mentioned by the Minister of Finance regarding the pension age, the pensionable age, to bring it in line with that of women? This is not the same issue, you.
I think he said something about pensionable age in the government,
yeah,
coming to 55. Yeah.
Section 20. Section 20 is a particular section that allows the minister to delegate some of his powers, and it says that the minister may, in writing and on such conditions as he may or she may deem fit, delegate any power conferred upon him or duty assigned to him or her by this act, excluding any powers conferred upon him or signed upon him or her by sections. So these are the exclusionary ones that are included now. What the bill is proposing is just delete. So it's not, I don't think it's within ourselves now, maybe we want to, but it's not a big job as far as I see, because what the bill is saying is, let's just exclude those two, 2A and B. But I'm saying it's the fact that all these sub-clauses have been put here is not really a matter for which we have been asked to consider ourselves. What we really only need to consider ourselves with that too. Yeah.
Yeah. See, these are, say, he may delegate excluding any power conferred upon by sections these. So at the moment, he may not delegate those. Now we want to take it out, which means that in future, the minister can delegate to somebody somewhere to buy property and land and to sell property and land and, you know. Yeah. 20 say the minister may, in writing on such occasion, conditions may deem fit, delegate any power conferred upon or due to sign him or her by this act, excluding any power conferred upon. And then all these numbers, all these sections, and part of that is 12.2 A and B. In other words, as it stands at the moment, the minister may not delegate the power to buy or sell immovable property. No, it's right. It's right, I'm right. Look at 20. Let me read slowly. Section 21, which want to be amended, at the moment read the following. The minister may, in writing and on such conditions as he or she may deem fit, he may delegate any power conferred upon a duty assigned him or her by this act, excluding any power conferred upon or due to signed him or her by sections, and then a whole list of sections, inclusive at the moment in the principal act of section 12.2 A and B, the right to acquire and sell property, and by deleting that now, by taking it out through the amendment, it means that those sections are not excluded anymore from those that the minister may delegate, and in future, if we pass this, the minister may now delegate the power to acquire or sell immovable property to somebody.
Yeah, I mean, that's my understanding of what it reads now. It merely says that the minister, if you look at the Principal Act, you'll see that at 12.2 A and B, section on the Principal Act, section 12, subsection 2, A and B, A says that he can acquire immovable property, and B says he can sell and dispose of the things. And if we now, if the amendment goes through, what has been said is that those powers can now be delegated, because the way the Act says now, those are the things he cannot delegate. If we take those out of the Principal Act, means he would be able to delegate the power. Look, it's not. I mean, it's a. It's honourable members, can I have your attention? It's easy understandable, right? It, obviously, what we require is explained to be explained. It looks a bit nervous at the moment, and I don't think we need to get into a long debate about it. It's clear we understand what has been said here now. I don't know if there's any other act dealing with any other department that would give these delegated powers to officials. Particularly when it comes to the question of responsibility, you know, it would be very problematic. One can imagine, you see, but maybe there are you know, there are more strange things in heaven that, than what we understand. So let's see, flag and get an understanding of what has been said here. So there's the long title. The long title in clause 12, I don't think there's any problem. We're just adding the National Communication Center there. Amendment of the laws, it's in the schedule. And the short title, I don't think there's a problem there. If we turn over then to page 5, and we look at page 5 and 6 and 7, there are a whole range of consequential amendments that would result if these amendments are to follow in the main act. Perhaps we could just page through them, because again this is something we'll have to apply our minds to and give much more attention. I don't know if there's anything there that the honourable members. I think the particular problem that we would have as a legislature is that it's almost impossible to go and do a scanning of each and every act passed by Parliament and to see whether these amendments which have been proposed are taken into consideration consequential amendments which might be required in those particular acts. So I think we need to be guided by people that actually did the research here. It would be, and that what is actually on paper here is actually correct. You know, it could might well be possible that some of the honourable members have insight from other committees, something that might affect a particular act which has not been dealt with here. But I think it would be very, very it would be very difficult here for us to sit and wonder and deliberate over, you know, each and every whether the Companies Act need to be amended now as a consequence of these amendments that are being proposed. So I think let's consider ourselves with, and you know, with whether what is being presented here is in fact correct. I don't think that we should I don't think that we should go through this now clause by clause or you know, act by act. But if there's anything on page 1 that the honourable members see now that might need attention, then I think they should raise it. Perhaps as we go through the pages, if the drafters are familiar with the proposal amendment set out in the schedule, they would be allowed to comment. But how do they, is there anything on page 5 that the honourable members wish to raise? I saw, if you look at perhaps the drafter can just advise us, in the first block dealing with Act 81 of 1969, just a query, towards the end of that particular block on the right hand side, you're dealing with the National Communication Center, and I take it that's the insertion which has been made, the South African National Academy of Intelligence, and you get COMSEC, or the office. Now, I don't know this office, what office has been referred to here? I did not want to appear to be stupid, so I thought I'd just raise this with the drafters and see whether there was perhaps something that I was not understanding here, or whether this was in fact an error. What office has been contemplated here?
Sorry, Chairperson, I don't have the relevant legislation in front of me at the moment. the Act 81 of 1969. So can I look at it, perhaps?
You say there's no explanation, but I mean, one agrees there is some confusion here. Okay, fine. We need some feedback on that. Just by way of what we see here, down, members, it's this particular thing that I'm saying we need to go through a little bit more carefully, and I don't think today is the day that we want to take, you know, a line by line and then refer. What I think I will do is get the staff to make copies of these particular acts so that one can have that cross-reference. You, at the moment, don't have all these acts in your bundle, but I think it would be necessary that when we do, that we just actually physically look in the next process when we deal with this particular amendment bill more carefully, that we actually physically look at the principal act and see what it is that we are, that is actually being proposed here. But I don't think today is the day we're going to do that. Then I go to page 6. If there's nothing obvious that wants to be, that needs to be said. I was just also wondering if the drafters can advise us here. I thought, for some reason or another, that the Oversight Act might have to be amended. I know I see there is an amendment in the other Amendment Act, but I was just wondering whether it wasn't necessary to amend, to put this in the schedule, or should that not also be included in the schedule, the amendment to the Oversight Act? Or are there no other amendments to the Oversight Act that might come here? It seems, has that homework been done?
Yes, Chairperson, the Oversight Act has been amended in the other legislation. But perhaps there's another thing that I took a note on, is to either is it necessary to have a schedule in the National Strategic Act, because the amendments are consequential. They came as a result of the establishment of the NCC, and the legislation that establishes the NCC is the Intelligence Services Act. So perhaps all the amendments to the other pieces of legislation should have been captured in the intelligence, in this act, in this bill, the Intelligence Services Act, rather than in the National Strategic. But that's something that I'll have to look at it, and then I'll come back to you when you discuss this in the next meeting, Chair.
Yeah, which is now the thing which I'm asking, that the Oversight Act should not be here, but yeah, let's leave that. Then let's go to page 7 then. There's an amendment, we're adding part B. Is there anything special that we need to understand about this part B now to the schedule? Inspectorate for Social Assistance. Any comments on that?
Thanks, Chair. This is just an insertion in the Public Service Act, because this is going to be a government department on its own, so it's going to be a Schedule 1. And it. So the intention here is to add the National Communications Center in the schedule to the Public Finance Management Act. And this was also consulted with the public service, with the relevant department. Thanks, sir.
But what I'm asking is, why is it called Part B?
B to this schedule. We've got Schedule 1, Part A. Part A is dealing with the other amendments. If you look on page 5. Page 5 has got schedule. It's got two parts. It's got part A, which is dealing with the consequential amendments. And then Part B, which is this specific amendment to the Public Service Act. Mm-hmm. So it's a Part B to the schedule of this bill.
And you're saying there's no problem with that? You're saying there's no problem with that?
There's no problem, Jefferson. Thanks.
Honourable members, I think we've done a good day's work on the amendments. We've gone through them. I see there's still some questions on them. There are some other household things which we'll get onto. But yes, I'll hear you, honourable members.
Chair, on page 8, again the financial implications. We need to relook at that. I want to suggest that there are in fact financial implications. They may be very minor in the case of this bill, but because it also involves the NCC, we can't say there are no financial implications, given that we've already agreed that there in fact are.
Thank you, Honourable Anders. Is there anything else to be said? Also on page 8, the departments, I'm looking at point 3, departments consulted, it says very broadly and vaguely all government departments have been consulted. That's a whole lot of departments. And perhaps when you come back after, you can be more specific rather than just saying all government departments. I would have thought that I would not have picked it up if it said all relevant government departments have been consulted, but to suggest that all government departments have been consulted indicates that there hasn't been much consideration given to what has been said here. All government departments, if you said all relevant government departments, one might have then understood that you consulted the relevant departments, but can you perhaps just be more specific when we get back? Honourable Vardy?
Thank you. Just a question again. 6.1 of the memorandum. The state law advisors and the Department of Intelligence.
There's no such.
Do we have a department?
There's no department. There's a ministry.
Honourable Vardy, thanks for raising that very, very important observation. But you know, there is generally a misunderstanding of what is really happening in the intelligence community. You yourself have been called by your colleagues here at Parliament, very honourable members of Parliament think that you and other of your colleagues are spooks. And I understand that they consider you to be an intelligent agent of some sort. So I don't think, yes, but it is an error. In a more serious, what's the name? It is an error. I think what has been said here, I think we understand what has been said. We are talking about the ministry here. But I think the law advisor should be more accurate with what they say rather than take it for granted that we understand these things, because there are other people that read these documents and we don't want them to be misled with what happens here and also in the ministry. Anything else? Then let's conclude on that, on the understanding. We'll meet next Tuesday and deal with these things and the minister more intensely. If there is a need, I take it that the state law advisors will be present again. If there's a need for the NCC to be here in any capacity or the other, I will make the necessary communication and to say, but I think I will also interact with the ministry just to make sure that we understand. I based on what the committee had said previously, I did contact the minister, and I have already explained that he wasn't available, but has made himself available next week, and I think we've identified next Tuesday as the day. We'll just finalize that appointment. I understood the minister to say that there would be a cabinet meeting possibly next week, and it's more than likely to be Wednesday, so we don't want to interfere with that. I see the Honourable Wadi wants to raise. Before I go on, let me hear you, Honourable Wadi.
I just want to establish, Chairperson, I mean, at least in other committees, when we're dealing with legislation, the department and its legal team is always present.
Mm.
Now, today it might be that they didn't know we are going to be dealing with this. They knew. But it is unacceptable that they are not here if they were told. That there's nobody here to explain.
Mm.
But this... No, I'm not talking about the state law advisors. But are they able to explain all these amendments?
Mm-mm.
Well, you mean the ministry?
Well, the ministry. The people who actually... drafting and introducing the bill. Oh, they need to explain.
You explained yesterday, Chair, that
Mrs.
Corenza Millard was sick, so, and Mr. Vardy wasn't here, so.
Now, you can raise a point of order, or you can raise a totally new point. But if you're on this point, then it's fine. I'd hear you on this point. If you've got a new point, let's first finish this point. Is it on this point?
Mr. Vardy is right. And I hear, I was present when you raised that issue of Ms. Corenza. But you see, a department can't stand still because one person is sick, and now all of a sudden everything must stand still. It's not a one-man show. And I've raised this thing when we started with this process, Chairperson. Where's the ministry? Because we are asking questions, and Mr. Vardy is correct. The questions must be answered, clarification questions. Now we must flag. The process is... I support what Mr. Vardy, but I hear what Mr. Landis. I was there yesterday when you explained to.
The Honourable Bloom.
Yes,
at some time during the meeting last week, both you and the Honourable Vardy were not present, and at that stage during the meeting. And with the opening up of the meeting too, I had indicated the communication that had taken place between myself and the Ministry of Fact that Ms. Millard had taken ill and was not available, and the fact that the Minister also wasn't going to be available. It was on that understanding that the committee members said, look, will you please liaise with the Minister and find out what his availability is. I then wrote him a letter based on that understanding that was taken in the committee meeting, asking him about his availability to attend the meeting. And the ministry replied in writing to say that he was overseas. I took the thing further than that to ask if it wasn't possible then to speak to him personally. And he was... accommodating by giving me his staff, his cell number, and I phoned him overseas, and it was as a result of my discussion with him that there was this understanding that we will have him in person next week sometime. Now, the issues of the ministry actually being present, yes, you've raised it before, and The one of the things I understood is that we did not really want the advocate here again, because we did not, I think, consider that the advocate was actually from the ministry. You remember the advocate, Varney, I think it is, that was part of the drafting team. So I don't think there was anything much more that we could do. on the issue, Honorable Bloom. And I hope the explanation that I've given has been sufficient and that we don't canvass that particular point any further. Is it still on the same point? Perhaps allow me, Honorable Bloom, allow me to suggest to you, because I'm not going to be speaking for the minister, okay, I'm going to suggest that we're going to get the minister here next week, and I would suggest to you that if you have a particular view on the minister's manner in which he should interact with this legislation or with this committee, then I think you should raise it with the minister next week when he comes to the committee. Otherwise, I'm going to be offering you explanations and trying to quiet you down. I think take it up with the minister, whatever it is that you want to take up, he will be here. And I think that would be the appropriate time.
Let me clarify the issue. It's not about the minister. It's not about the minister. When we are dealing with legislation, with bills, the person or the department who have introduced this thing must be present for clarification on each and every question, not you as the chairperson. And that's why I'm supporting what Mr. Vadi is saying. It's not about the minister. You know that when we in the other committee had a bill before us, Minister Balfour was never present. The state law advisor know that. She was there. Ma'am, you were there. He was not a single time. I didn't have any problem with that. But the department was there for I think 2 months in each and every meeting for them to explain and clarify some of the issues. It's not about the minister.
Mr. Bloom, your point is taken. Can we get to you, Mr. Vadi? Same point now.
It's the same point. You see, it's not...
I think you... If you want to take Mr. Bloom's point further, then I think we accept the fact that unless any other members are saying it's not necessary, let's accept the fact that the ministry should be here. But let's raise the thing with the minister. Because I don't think we should now be convincing ourselves of what the situation should be. Let's raise the thing with the minister. I mean, if they are not here and they should know that they should be here, who are we now to answer for them? I'm not going to answer for them. Now, if you're going to talk in that context, then I don't think I or this committee can take it any further. If there's something different, then fine, I hear you.
No, I think if you will allow me.
Yes.
You see, if I remember last week, was it last week? There was nobody again from the ministry or the let's call it the department, but in this case it will be NIA. Why? Because the legal representative of the ministry was in court. Now, it can't be that this is one person responsible for the introduction and drafting of a bill. There must be a team of people, because if the person is sick, let's say hypothetically the person dies tomorrow, so there'll be nobody here because there's only one person from the ministry that's a legal representative. How do we process this bill? I mean, there's other responsibilities, there's court cases, etc., but surely there must be a person from the ministry or the department here present when Parliament is dealing with the relevant issues. Now, you can't say the NCC people must deal with this matter because there are other issues that are not related to the NCC in this amendment. And if repeatedly there's an absence, then we can't process and complete our work. That's the only problem that I have.
Thank you, Honorable Vadi. The Honorable Swat's now also in. Want to say something, Honorable Swat? Your hand was up.
Yeah, Chair, what I wanted to say, Mr. Vadi, made probably not sensible. Because what I wanted to say is we dealt primarily with the NCC bill. Only today we start with this, and the bigger part of this bill today is still consequential things of the NCC bill. And all the time we enjoyed the company of Mr. Yafta and the senior law advisor of the NCC and the state law advisor. So I've been here every day, and what I came to understand is that the things that we are flagging things for discussion whenever we have a quorum like today, but with a nerd in the past. But the way I experienced it was that the things that we really couldn't get answers on were actually the policy matters. We neither department, probably not even Corenza Miller, to be able to give proper answers on the policy. That's something that, and that's why we decided to discuss with the minister. But I don't want, I'm just offering, there's people sitting here who really assisted us over a number of days, and I think we should appreciate what they tried to do in assisting us. In terms of the NCC Act, I think we will be dealt with everything apart from the policy issue of the minister's involvement, and that's all.
I think I've said what needs to be said. I don't want the Honourable Bloom and the Honourable Vadi to think that this what they are saying is not important, and what the Honourable Swat is now saying, maybe they should have been here, but we didn't need the minister in any event. I think that. Okay, sorry then if I summarized you wrong. Let me steer clear what you said. Because really what has been said here...
No,
I think the issue here is, let's have this understanding that these things are going to be raised in front of the minister. We don't want to take this thing any further now. You know? Because the minister might ask you, on what basis do you want me to be here every day if you're talking about, you know? And then we will explain. So since, can we agree, my honourable members, the very concerned ones? Can we agree that these things would be raised with the minister? Okay. Now, can I move on to? I'm advised here by the honourable secretary that the minister might not be available next Tuesday. Allow me to look, because he did give me an undertaking that next week sometime. Can I be allowed in the next day or two just to finalize that arrangement as to when precisely he's going to be available? And then you would be notified before the end of the week of time, place, and all those things. Don't worry, we won't let you down on that. Then just by way of the where we go to from now, We had public submissions last week on the Protection of Information Bill, and we can't just leave the thing hanging in the air. I don't know if there is a particular view that any of the members want to raise on where we go. What I did see is that there was a lot of concern that there is a need for us to be very cautious about how we proceed. There are issues that were raised that we need to seriously consider, and so there should be no rush that we in the manner in which we deal with this. But I see the Honourable Landers has something to say.
Chairperson, thank you for raising this or for putting it on the table. We appreciate it. some of us have informally and off the record had little chats about this. And the chairperson of the JSCI doesn't normally phone me at the time that he phoned me last night, but he did to also raise this concern, which I will try not to misinterpret him or misrepresent him. Beg your pardon. Some of us feel that given the submissions we've received, firstly, and then also given the deadline set for us by Jeff Deutsch, who's the chairperson of committees and responsible for legislation that goes through Parliament or through the National Assembly, that we shouldn't deal with the Protection of Information Bill with haste, because that's what it's going to mean, that we act with haste. And we fear that if we do, we'd be damaging our own cause. And so we want to just put it on the table that the committee or the ad hoc committee should give serious consideration as it relates to the Protection of Information Bill to not act with haste. There are implications, of course, and we are mindful of those. The implications being that if we don't pass it in this year, that the bill then lapses. But we are confident that that will not mean that the minister is unable to table it again next year. And so we will comfortably be able to take up next year where we left off this year. But in doing so, we will not be accused of having bulldozed the bill simply to accommodate the coming elections next year. And Chairperson, I don't know how other members will want to respond. They are free to do so. I have not canvassed this widely. It's just one or two people that have discussed this informally. But now that you've put it on the table, we thought we should raise it. Thank you.
Thank you, Honourable Londers. Anybody else? Honourable Bill?
Okay. No, I want to support what Mr. Landers have just said, because I discuss it also. I don't know why is he not mentioning my name. He's only mentioning the chairperson's name, calling him late at night, but I support what he said.
The Honourable Vardy?
Look, honourable members, we did have a very intensive session last week with the public hearings, and what followed there, and just prior to that, was a number of letters requesting me to allow other people to make submissions. I had a letter from the Cape Bar Council making a written submission. There was one from Cusato asking for an extension. There's various people that phoned me, so there's obviously a deeper interest, and a lot of people that have missed the deadline are asking now for an opportunity to participate. I did say in a media briefing that it was not the intention of the committee to exclude people from making submissions, particularly if they were interesting ones, different from what we have already heard. And if you look at the submission of the Bar Council, the Cape Bar Council, it's on different issues that was really not even raised in the submissions which we had before us last week. So I think let's understand first that we're going to deal with the minister on these two NCC bills in terms of what we agreed on earlier. When we have the committee meeting next week, perhaps we can decide how to take the Protection of Information Bill further. Because I think what are the things we would have to consider is the further submissions, whether we're going to have further submissions, whether we would want them in oral or whether we would want, you know, just accept written ones. And then also, as a committee, I think we need to sit down and assess very seriously the submissions that we heard. Although we have had the written submissions, I think the point that was made in at the oral submissions, we were making some of those points quite clear. And I think at some time, as a committee, we just have to, as one session, sit down and deal with these oral submissions and just see how we can to analyze it and process the thing. And from that point on, I think once we've done that process, we need to consider what next we will do as a committee. I don't want to at this stage create this impression, particularly if there are media people here, that the committee, the ad hoc committee, does not intend to deal with this thing because it's become too complicated. Let it not be said in the media, and if there's any media people here, let it not be reported that this committee does not intend to deal with the bill because there were all these concerns raised. What we are saying is that we, having listened to the public, we are quite happy to consider what has been said, and that it would require a deeper debate within the committee on these issues because we have not really debated the issues in the committee. And once we've debated these issues, we will see where this takes us, whether the time limits that have been set to the committee are sufficient for us to process the thing in the year. And I think what the Honourable Landers is saying, it might well be, but that is as that would be as a consequence. It's not the direction that the committee is going to be moving in. The committee is what we are saying at this stage. We need to seriously look at this thing and deal with it from an informed and a responsible way. And we will then have to just see our time period. So perhaps we need to already look at our next meeting when we deal with the deliberations on the submissions, is the time period that has been set to us by Parliament to report, which I think is the end of this month, the end of August, and whether we shouldn't by now be asking for an extension on that. But I think we can leave it until we get to that discussion. I don't think we need to take that decision now. But it looks already as if we might not be able to meet that particular deadline. But let it not be said that we take that decision now. But I think if we can understand, if the committee can understand it from that point of view, then perhaps we'll leave the further dealing with the promotion information bill, the protection of information bill, till when we meet and discuss with the minister, we'll have a session then and just decide how we're going to take the thing forward and when we will meet on that bill as a committee. Because the intention was that these two smaller bills might be easily dealt with and disposed of, and then we can spend more time on the protection of information bill. But it is not our intention to lapse this thing. It is not our intention not to deal with the thing. On an ongoing basis, on a daily basis, people are still phoning me, so the interest is very high. Honourable members, unless you have something to say on that, it seems then that it is not going to be necessary for us to meet tomorrow, because we need the next step is the minister. So tomorrow's meeting would then be cancelled. The question regarding next week's meeting, the next meeting we would be having would more than likely be Tuesday and Wednesday, or Tuesday or Wednesday. I think we will notify the honourable members after I finalise the communication with the minister. The secretary informs me that one of the television institutions wants to interview me on the protection of on the NCC bill. I don't know how the committee feels about that. Is it something that needs to go, you know, to... no, Honourable Swartz, I'm not the legislature. I'm not going to be saying that we're not going to allow things or we are going to allow things. I can only deal with the bill as it is in the form. It's a very incomplete form. And, you know, perhaps the things that you're hoping, I would say, are things that the department or the minister should be saying, not me. I can only deal with the work that is incomplete at the moment. You know, I don't have any secrets to disclose to the media, but look, let me... Can I be allowed to use my discretion as to whether or not I shall take up this appointment? I'll release you in a few minutes or in a few seconds. The talk that we had planned in terms of the what's the name was still outstanding. The Indians have asked us to give them new dates. You recall there was a problem, the Indian government was about to collapse because there was some vote of no confidence, and the president was apparently at the G8 discussions in in Japan at the time and had to rush home. He seemed to have avoided the coalition collapsing. But the problem that arose for the committee was that all visits to India were put on hold. I understand it's business as usual now again, and the time periods that they're having problem with the time periods, but I'm just informing you as to what actually the position is at the moment. We're going to have to look at that again some other time. Okay. Honourable members, the meeting is closed.
Thank you.